Back in my college days, there was a time that I recall a number of us, half a dozen or more, students who were just standing around on the campus talking. And in the midst of that conversation, the girls who were there asked a question of the fellows that almost sounded like it had really been planned by all of the girls. And they asked us, "What's the first thing you notice about a girl?" Well, immediately that sounded to me to be a question that was dangerous to even answer. But some of the fellows attempted to answer it by referring to certain aspects of their bodily appearance. And after a couple of responses, the girl said, "Now wait a minute. What if she is actually a nice girl? What if she has a great personality? What if she has a wonderful character?" Time out, girls. What was the question that you asked? What is the first thing that you notice about a girl? Now, how often do you recognize a personality or a character before seeing the person in his or her appearance? And so it seemed to me, anyway, that their response was unfair. After all, this was in the days prior to the internet, when you had where there were no there was no Match.com or ChristiansMingle.com or SovereignGraceSingles.com. There was no way to get acquainted with someone on the internet. Oh, I suppose you could have had somebody connect you by phone, where you get to know someone without seeing that person. But for the most part, you see somebody in the flesh prior to being able to understand what the character or personality of that person is. In other words, there are different ways that we get to know people. We get to see who they are. And as there are these different ways that we get to be acquainted with people, so it is that there are different kinds of ways that we love them. Not all love is the same. After all, you might say something, "Well, I love pizza." And the childish response to that, of course, is, "Well, if you love it, why don't you marry it?" And of course, that's a different kind of love that you're talking about. And so it is that in the scriptures, we have different kinds of love that are set before us. And even when we come to Jesus talking to Peter, after Jesus' resurrection in John chapter 21, and he asks, "Do you love me?" And Peter's response in the English anyway is, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." It all sounds the same to us, but in reality it is different. We want to look at this beginning with some events that preceded it by maybe 2 weeks or so. Beginning with John chapter 13. Jesus has washed the feet of the disciples. And after washing the feet of the disciples, he has instituted the Lord's Supper. Judas has been sent out to do what he will do to betray Jesus. And we come then to verse 31. This is on page 270 of the Pew Bibles. "When he had gone out," or 1070, I think I said 270, 1070. "When he had gone out, Jesus said, 'Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and yet glorify him at once. Little children, yet a little while, I am with you. You will seek me, and just as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment that I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus answered him, where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow afterward. Peter said to him, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. Jesus answered, will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, the rooster will not crow till you have denied me three times. Now let's turn over to John chapter 18. Jesus has, and the disciples have gone out to the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus has been arrested. He is being tried. And Peter and John are two who have followed as closely as they dared. And on page 1074 then, in John 18, beginning with verse 15, we read, Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Since that disciple was known to the high priest, he entered with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood outside at the door. So the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to the servant girl, who kept watch at the door, and brought Peter in. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, you also are not one of this man's disciples, are you? He said, I am not. Now the servants and officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself. Let's move down now to verse 25. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself, so they said to him, you also are not one of his disciples, are you? He denied it and said, I am not. One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, did I not see you in the garden with him? Peter again denied it, and at once a rooster crowed. Jesus is crucified and rises again from the dead, appears to his disciples, and then let's turn over to chapter 21. And here in chapter 21, let's look down to verse 15, where we have Jesus dealing with Peter after the breakfast there on the shore of the lake. Of the Sea of Galilee. It has been an unusual time. They went fishing through the night and didn't catch anything. And from the shore, they saw this man who told them to throw the net on the other side of the boat, and then they couldn't draw in the catch that they had. It was so great. They finally were able to draw it in and found large fish there, 153 of them. And they realized it was Jesus. And he was preparing fish there, broiling fish there on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. And they came and had breakfast. And the way it looks to me, Peter and Jesus get up for a little bit of a walk on the shore. And as they're walking, beginning with verse 15, we read, when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, Tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, Do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, Feed my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, Follow me. May God bless to us the reading of these portions of his holy word as we consider it together. My own understanding of what takes place in this chapter has been modified through the years. There was a time when I was in high school that a visiting minister at our church preached on this passage and spoke of the terms that were used for love here, and noted that they were different terms. Peter used a different term from what Jesus used. And he indicated that the term that Peter used is a lesser love than what Jesus was referring to. Since that time in studying it, it seems to me that that's not the case. That it is a different term, but not necessarily a lesser term. In fact, both kinds of love are required of us, are things that we are to be involved in. And then it was pointed out to me that this conversation probably took place in Aramaic rather than in Greek. And in Aramaic, they do not have the separate terms for love that they have in the Greek. But as in thinking further upon this, it seems to me that in the Aramaic, they probably have other terminology that might be translated in the way that Jesus and Peter used those terms, just as we have other terminology in the English to indicate the two kinds of love that are mentioned here. If you're looking at the outline that has been placed in as a bulletin insert, you'll notice that there are different words that are used for love. Three Greek terms especially that are used to cover the basic usage of the English term love. Two of them are used in this passage. The first word is, and it's a family of words, these are families of words really, agape and agapao, agapao being the verb form and agape being the noun form. This is a term that indicates reverence and respect. You seldom find it outside of the New Testament in Greek literature of that period. In fact, R.C. Trench has been so helpful on this in his book, Studies Synonyms of the New Testament. And he deals with these terms in that in one of his chapters. And he even claims that among the pagan writers of that era, it was never used. Apparently, since that time, a usage has been found of it in the pagan writers. But it's basically a Christian term that has to do with respect and reverence. Perhaps we can illustrate it with an experience from my fifth grade time when my parents, I went with my family to a football game out in Whittier, California. It was Occidental College against Whittier. And Whittier college, my dad's alma mater, was soundly defeating Occidental. And apparently there was a lot of frustration. And so in the fourth quarter, there was a fight that broke out on the field. Now immediately, the band director for Whittier College had his band start to play the national anthem. And all those fighters stood up at attention. I don't think that would work today. But you see, there was such a respect and reverence for the country that when the national anthem was played, they quit fighting and they stood at attention. Reverence and respect. They loved their country. That's the kind of thing that we're dealing with here when Jesus says, Peter, do you love me? And it's the same term that's used back in chapter 13 when he says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Do you have this honor? Do you regard me with this honor and respect that should be given to me? But Peter, in his response, does not see that as quite the appropriate term to be used. There is much more feeling that he has for Christ than just reverence and respect. And so he says, he uses the term phileo. That's the verbal form, or phile being the noun form. Lord, you know that I love you. I have affection for you. I have this longing for you, this loving affection. Not just respect, as we might have for respect for the uniform of the police officer, or for the office of the president or the governor, but this is an affection that you might not have for the police officer or for the president or the governor. You're going to have different ways that you think of, but there's still a love that you're to have for them, because God says you're to love your neighbor as yourself. And it's that term of respect and reverence. And if you don't think that you can even do that, remember he also says you shall love your enemies. So if you don't like the president, you still have a responsibility to love him, to respect him, to reverence that position that God has given to him. It's also the noun form of this verb is also one that's used when Judas comes to Jesus there in the garden with that mob that is to arrest him. And Jesus says to Judas, Judas, do you betray me with a phile, with a kiss? That's the way it is that's another meaning of the term. It indicates that love. And when you read in the scriptures in the New Testament, greet one another with a holy kiss, there it's that word phile. You're to have that affection for one another. And so it looks like Judas is showing great affection for Jesus as he betrays him with a kiss. Now there's another term that is never used in the New Testament, but it's important for us to look at that term as well. And it will be important as you look at other issues in life later on. And that's the word eros. And that has to do with a yearning that you have. Maybe something that is unfulfilled. A young man goes out on a date with a girl for the first time, and he comes home and, wow, he yearns for her. Now, it's not this word exactly, but it's a word, but there are other words in this family of words that are used in the Septuagint, that is, the Greek translation of the Old Testament. One of those places that it is used is in the book of Esther. In Esther chapter 2, we read that the king, Ahasuerus, loved Esther. And this is the terminology that is, this is the term rather, that is used to express that love. In verse 17 of Esther chapter 2, the king loved Esther more than all the women. Now, we get a little bit of a picture of what it was that he loved about her. Because you look at the earlier part of the chapter, and you are told about Esther, how she comes into the story, that she is Mordecai's cousin, the daughter of his father's brother, the daughter of his uncle. And if you were to look in the New American Standard at this point, and also in regard to Rachel, back in the book of Genesis, there's an expression used only of these two women. She was beautiful of form and face. She had a great face to look at. She also had a great figure. That's what it's saying. And that's what Ahasuerus, the king, is seeing. He loved. He yearned for Esther more than for all the other women. Now, just as a sidelight, it's very interesting to me in looking at the Septuagint that the English translation of the Septuagint here in chapter 2 is that Mordecai was actually raising the daughter of his uncle to be his wife. You don't get that from so much from the Hebrew or from the English translations that we have of the Hebrew. And so some people would say, well, wait a minute, why did he let her go to Ahasuerus? Well, remember, it was the king's men who were going out to find the lovely women to bring in. It wasn't that Mordecai is saying, oh, here's Esther, take her. But rather, they took her. And he didn't have any say in it. So anyway, you get the picture, I think, of these three terms. Where we use the term love to cover all of these categories. At times it is a feeling that is visceral. In fact, in the King James, there is that expression, bowels of mercies. There are times when you really feel it in your gut. You start churning because of that yearning that you have, that longing that you might have for another. We won't take time to look at that. But let me just mention one of those places, and that's in Genesis chapter 43. Again, the King James uses the term bowels when it says that Joseph saw Benjamin for the first time after all those years that he had been down in Egypt, that his bowels yearned for him. It was an expression of love. But love is also an activity that can be commanded. I cannot command you to have a visceral feeling, a visceral longing for one another. And so God doesn't do that. He doesn't command you to phileo someone, but he does command you to agape someone, to agapao someone, to have that respect and reverence for him and for your neighbor. So that when we read the greatest commandment, you shall love the Lord your God, it's agapao that is used there. Now Christ, in Peter's conversation, Christ says, do you agapao me? Do you respect and reverence me? And Peter's response is, Lord, you know that I phileo you, that I have this great affection for you. And Trench, in his comment on this in Synonyms of the New Testament, says the term agape was not strong enough for Peter. He wanted to show his affection for Christ. Christ commands respect and reverence, but he also desires our affection. You see, that's how we are to live. We are to be affectionate toward Christ, even though it's not something that is directly commanded, but we are also to respect and reverence him. We are to love him in both of these ways, as he commands respect and reverence of us. As you see in that greatest command, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. As our Creator and our Redeemer, it's only proper that we should show him that respect. He made us. He has this power, this glory. And the more we come to behold him in his greatness, the more we would be compelled, you see, to love him in this way, to respect and reverence him. And that respect and reverence is shown also in the tabernacle, as there was the holiest place, and you could not go in there. Only the high priest once a year could go in there to make atonement for the people, because they were to hold God in such reverence, with such respect, to know that he is such an awesome God, and that they would be destroyed if they tried to go into his presence without the sacrifice, without the atonement being made for him. We are to be affectionate, though, for Christ, toward Christ. Even though affection is never commanded. But the affections need to be there, and your affections are going to say a great deal about where you are with Christ, about your standing with Christ, as you have responded to his love for you. And affection has to be developed by coming to know him. You don't see someone for the first time and in the first minute have all of these affections for that person. Oh, it may be that a fellow sees a gal like Queen Esther and immediately has this visceral longing for her. But if she turns out to be someone who has a personality that is not so good, the affection's not going to be there. He's not going to respond in the same way. But a proper relationship with Christ is something that should grow your affections. But also, we are to be both respectful and affectionate toward one another in belonging to Jesus Christ. The Apostle Peter, in his second letter, 2 Peter chapter 2, sets before us a number of things that we need to develop in our character. And it's an interesting list. 2 Peter chapter 1, 2 Peter chapter 1, he says, his divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of him who called us to his own glory and excellence, by which he has granted us his precious and very great promises. And so he says, now add to your faith these different things. And if you jump down to verse 7, and to godliness, brotherly affection. Now the word brotherly affection is Philadelphia. Phile, affection, adelpha, brotherly. Brotherly affection. Thus, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is supposed to be the city of brotherly love. Philadelphia. And then what are you to add at the end of the verse? Agape, love. Both of them are required. Both of them are things that you and I are to have toward God and toward one another. They both belong to us. Now, how do you have these things? How do you develop them? Well, respect and reverence of God is going to take place by coming to know His character, to recognize His positions as the Creator, as the King, as the Redeemer. What great positions these are. There are people whom you should respect just because of their positions, whether it's your boss or your political leader. Sometimes you look at their character and you say, well, they're not worthy of that kind of respect. Well, maybe not as according to their character, but according to the uniform that they wear, the badge that is given to them, you owe them that respect and honor. And so it is with God. When we recognize that He is the Creator, He is the King, He is the Redeemer, that in itself commands our respect. And the more we recognize Him to be in those positions, the more we are compelled to respect and reverence Him. To recognize that He is the one who is holy, most holy, completely holy. His eternal power and divine nature bring you to be in awe of Him. But also grow in affection toward Christ as you remember what He's done for you. Think of what it took for Him to leave the glories of heaven, to come to earth and to endure what is basically a cesspool for Him. What He had to endure here on earth was such a letdown from heaven. But then He even went to the cross for it. He went to the cross in order to deal with our sin and to deliver us from the power of sin and death. And not only that, He is interceding for you, because without that intercession, you wouldn't be able to even to bring your request to the Father and to have Him hear you. Jesus Himself is one who has to intercede for you. He has to bring your prayers to the Father. And that's why we pray in Jesus' name. Not just using the formula of those words, but really praying in His name, coming to Him just as you come to the bank and you say, give me $1 million. And the bank says, no. We're not going to give you $1 million, but I have this check here from Donald Trump for $1 million. Oh, okay. We know that he can back it up. So it is in Jesus' name. He can back it up. He can back up those prayers that we bring to Him. But also long to be with Christ. He calls you into fellowship with Himself. That's really what Revelation 3:20 is all about. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. He's talking to the church, to the people who are already trusting in Him, and says, I stand at the door and knock. If any man will hear my voice and will open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him and he with me. We will have this sweet fellowship together. This kind of fellowship for which you and I ought to be longing to have with Him. And you see, when you begin to yearn for Christ that way, your yearning for the world disappears. You can't have both of those yearnings together. Elizabeth Barrett Browning had a sonnet that she began, How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I want you to consider how you love the Lord. How would you answer Jesus' question? Just use the English word and all of its facets, the respect and reverence. the affection, the yearning. Let your love for Christ grow. In half a day, we start a new year. How will you grow this year? Think about how your love for Christ is going to grow. Because he asks, "Do you love me?" There was Peter who had denied him three times. And Jesus gives him the opportunity to correct all of that as he kindly brings him together, brings him in, and says, "Three times, do you love me?" Resolve in this new year to grow in your love for God in every way. Turn with me, please, to Psalm 116.